Next up, we've got Mike Burns from the University of Michigan, who'll be presenting some of the interesting analytics work that we're doing. The Courting Center does have some data analytics folks, and Mike and Amy will be presenting that.
Okay, so thanks, Sachin. Again, my name is Michael Burns from the University of Michigan. So thanks for coming out and listening. The project I want to talk to you about today is it's titled Automated Anesthesiology CPT Code Assignment Using Natural Language Processing and Machine Learning. There's a lot of people who are involved. John's listed here. There's a lot more people that are involved from MPOG. Without them, we wouldn't be there with the project. So kind of getting into it, CPT stands for Current Procedure Terminology. It's a primary mode of reimbursement for procedures within anesthesiology. In MPOG, we use CPT codes for case organization for research studies, and we also use it as inclusion and exclusion criteria for quality measures. And the problem is that we get EMR data from sites much earlier than we get their billing data, and the billing data is where the CPT codes exist. So for those researchers who want to use recent metrics, they're delayed by 1 or 2 months. And for those in quality, where we want to return some performance evaluations, we're delayed by 1 or 2 months as long as we're waiting on this billing data. So we decided, well, we could apply some of these new techniques to come up with a model which will help predict CPT codes in real time. And the results are here on the first screen. We implemented this model. We created an ensemble using machine learning, natural language processing. We're able to get over 95% accuracy to cover over 60% of the cases. And if you look at just the top three CPTs, we're 99.1% accurate. So going into how we did this, natural language processing was a big piece. I'd say it's probably 50% of the problem. Natural language processing is a branch of artificial intelligence that helps the computers understand and interpret human language. We needed this because we have physiologic data and patient data, which is nice and in robust forms, but the procedure text is difficult to work with. Because it's free text, and most of the time it's free text that was input by various sources, and sometimes, like the telephone game, it went through 3 or 4 iterations before it got to the computer. So natural language processing is great. We can do things like spelling corrections, we can remove characters, we can stem the words, we can do some more complex things like n-gramming, TF-IDF, and vectorization of the words. So I showed an example here. This is a sentence. It reads, "There was a cat, Felix, running in my yard this morning." I'm not sure why I chose this sentence, because I don't have a cat and there's no cats that run in my yard. But if you if you look at the sentence, there's a lot of words here, and there's some that are more meaningful than others. You train the machine, and this is all the pre-processing that's just natural language processing, so it's not a black box. We know exactly what it's doing. And it can identify the important words. You know, it can cut running into run. It can take Felix and change it to a lowercase. It can correct spelling, all sorts of things. So that sentence dumps down into cat Felix run yard morning, which to us probably isn't the best read, but for a computer it's much better. Then we can do things like n-gramming, where we take these the grouping of the sentence and how it's structured, and you can break it into pairs, which is the bigramming, cat Felix, Felix run, run yard, yard morning, or unigrams, which is just the single text themselves. And more complicated things, we can do skipgrams, we can do correlation studies. But ultimately, we're using this because we want to have variables from free text. So if we look at the natural language processing results from 1.1 million cases within MPOG, we find that, as most of you know, procedure text is very sparse, ends up being 10 words per case at average. Most of the time, you get a single word, like ECT, or you get colonoscopy, but a lot of times you'll also get 20 or 30 characters that don't mean too much. If you look at the vocabulary size of, across all the 1.1 million cases, it's only 25,000 unique words. Most of the words are rare. They occur in less than 10 cases out of the 1.1 million. And that encompasses 76% of the vocabulary size, so the vast majority is rare. There were 99.9% of the cases that had text, which was great, so all of it's filled out. The more troubling piece was that about a third of the vocabulary is just misspelled medical terms, and 21% of all the cases that we looked at in this 1.1 million group contained at least one misspelled medical term. So again, we use natural language processing to construct variables that then we can feed into a machine learning model. Machine learning is—it's a new science. It's exciting, but it's a little bit of a black box. So the computers can act without explicitly telling them how to act, but sometimes it's hard to figure out how they were acting. So the real important piece here is taking your data set. This is a flow diagram I've kind of shown on either of the screens. You pre-process it using things like the natural language processing, and you get a machine learning ready construct for your data set. This is important because the model will run and it will produce results regardless of what your inputs are. So if you have bad data going in, you'll get bad results coming out. So once you have your machine learning ready data set, you take a portion of that and you train machine learning models on that data set, holding out a portion as a test set. I show a holdout group here, and the holdout group is distinctly different and important because a holdout group is a class of data points that you believe will be unique to the other data set. So for instance, if I made a machine learning model for how to treat hypotension at the University of Michigan, and we created the greatest model in the world to work at University of Michigan, I take that model and I run it at Cleveland Clinic, it's probably not going to work that well. And for our standpoint, it doesn't work that well at all because the terminology is somewhat different between all these institutions. So the holdout set is an institution-specific group that we used. So once the model's trained, we have a model that we can run the tests and the holdout sets and any new data through, and we get results. So these are some of our results. We ended up creating 7 unique machine learning or deep learning models. I had 6 when I made this. We made another one recently, so we're at 7. The overall accuracy across all of the codes that we tested was 87%. And that's not that useful because CMS requires a 5% error rate. So we want the model to be at 95%. So we said, well, is there a way that we could tune a parameter to help define the accuracy of the predictions from the model? And we did, and we call this a confidence parameter. So what's shown in the table here is a breakdown of different confidences from the outputs and how accurate they are and how much of the cases they actually do cover. So you'll see if we look at a 95%, so a 5% error rate, we're at 54% of the cases, which is pretty good because we can identify these cases. And then this is what it looks like if you were to graph the confidence parameter versus the accuracy. You see that it's correlated almost perfectly. So you can set a threshold for how accurate you want the model to be, and it will give you the results that you're indicating. So if we look at the holdout data set, this is going from model 4 to model 7. The holdout data set in model 4, which was 95% for the lowest, the machine learning 4 CP H3, is now 93. So we lose 2% being generalized. With our new model, we're back up to 95%. Now we're incorporating 62% of the cases. So in summary, we have a model that works really well, and it's actually quite generalizable. So what do? We implemented this. So now all the research projects in MPOG can have CPT data for the existing case without the delay of the month or 2 months with billing data. All the quality feedback can be collected as soon as the case is actually completed. So the model works pretty quickly. We can do 1 million cases in 10 minutes. So all of MPOG could be reprocessed within 2 hours. It'll deliver top 3, top single choice, whatever you need. It also is tunable by accuracy. So we thought, well, the primary means for the MPOG group was in research and quality, but we use CPTs elsewhere in billing and reimbursement. So could this be usable in someone like the anesthesia group billing team at U of M? So we talked with the group. The group was doing their own auditing, and it's nice because there's a 6-month grace period for when the institutions submit, for when they can resubmit for errors. And we found that, or they found over a year, that if they chose just 6 CPTs, and out of a total of about 300, they were losing about $83,000 in annual revenue. And these were from underbilling. And so we ran the first month of data, and we found that they were missing 248 base units of net. So you'll see that the machine will predict when you're underbilling and overbilling, and the sum of these typically is an underbilling portion because you're looking to be safe on the side of any sort of auditing. Then we took the second month data, and we found 321 units of net base unit revenue difference. And now U of M anesthesia group is going through and they're resubmitting for some of these claims. So we built a testing interface to look at some of, to more or less visualize what we're looking at. If we look at some of these results, so I can show you these afterwards, but we're crunched on time, so let's get right to the results. These are some of the batch results that we found for the differences between what the human billers were finding and then our model was predicting. If we look at this, the CPT title there is what the human predictors, and then the model is the model code. The base unit difference is CPT minus model, so those that are negative are underbilling, those that are positive are overbilling. The CPT and the model text there is the text description of the code, and then the auditing is our results. So let's just look at a couple. If we look at 630 versus 670, it's a 5 base unit difference. The CPT of 630 claims that it's a lumbar region, otherwise specified. The model thinks it's a spine and spinal cord procedure. We looked at all of them. They were all spinal fusions. 1400 to 1402, which is a line below, says that these are knee procedures, not otherwise specified. The machine said these are total knee arthroplasties, and they were. And then if we look at 400 and 402, these are trunk procedures, not otherwise specified again. And the model thinks that they're reconstructive breast cases, and sure enough, they were. So the model's working very, very well for the use case scenarios. And for an auditing purpose, it's implemented quite well as well. So in summary, we developed an automated real-time anesthesia CPT tool. It's tunable right now. We're focusing on the 95% accuracy, and in doing so, we cover about 60% of the data. We've implemented it for research, for quality, and for billing. I think our next steps are to take the same types of methods and apply them to other types of codes, such as surgical CPT, ICD-9 and 10s, and we also want to build an interface to go beyond auditing and look into billing workflow. So with that, if there's any questions...
Hey, Mike, Ben from the University of Michigan again. One thing I was going to ask is this useful in other parts of the healthcare system, or is there anywhere else where you've been able to implement this at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. The methods that we use to build these models are generic, like in their single utility. It's just the combination of things that we use to make them specific. So you could use these same tools for almost anything, and especially the free text form. So natural language processing, when I first took the project on, I thought, wow, this is going to be a pain. And then I started getting into it. I was like, wow, this is actually really fun. So for the most part, almost all of the documentation that we have in the hospital is you know, free text to some extent. So I think applications of this can be directly used in other parts of medicine.
I can just make a comment as a department chair. It's very irritating to know we were losing $400,000 a year and paying a bunch of people to do it. So I wanted to move on to implement this in our department. So, I mean, the swing of not... I'm assuming we could go down to one auditor coder instead of, I don't know, 8 or 9 coders that are getting it wrong a certain amount of the time. And they have no incentive to get the right code. Their incentive is to code under... because they're worried. They're more worried about audits than they are bankruptcy. I'm more worried about bankruptcy. and I don't want to be accused of fraudulent underbilling.
Yeah, and it's a great point. I don't think it's ever going to put billers out of jobs, per se. I think it's going to, it will help redistribute their time.
It's a well-rehearsed answer. Excellent job, Mike. and the key is that, you know, we did this for research and quality improvement purposes, and it turns out it has some other potential benefits as well. Thanks so much, Mike. We got our... Thanks.